Hello, Minnesota boxing fans, and welcome to another episode of the Minnesota Fight Night podcast. I'm Brian Johnson, and my co-host is Sean Strauss. In this episode, we catch up with Minnesota boxer Tim Bender. A native of Florida, now living in Minneapolis, Bender will make his long-awaited pro boxing debut this Saturday, December 9th, as part of a Big Q Promotions card at Element Gym in St. Paul. Bender, who has an MMA background, takes on Terrence Lee, 2-1, of El Paso, Texas. It's shaping up to be a great night of boxing on the 9th, so we hope to see you there. And I hope you enjoy the interview.
All right, well, thanks for joining the Minnesota Fight Night podcast. Today we are joined with Tim Bender. He's got a fight coming up for the Element professional boxing show on December 9th. Tim, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We talked briefly at a media day at Element about a week ago, or a little less than a week ago. But we wanted to bring you back on because we didn't really get a chance to talk to you much and to dive into your backstory. And we really want fans to know, you know, how you got into fighting, and how you got to where you are right now, and then know about the fight. Obviously we'll get to that, you know, and you can talk about your opponent and all that, but can you just give fans, you know, a little background on how you got into fighting? Cause it sounds like you got some mixed martial arts and some boxing. And
sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always had an interest, you know, watched boxing and UFC and was, you know, followed for many years. And yeah, I kind of always wanted to try myself, but didn't really have like the time or the means necessarily to make it happen for a long time. And eventually kind of things got better for me, you know, with work and things like that. And so I kind of had like the means and the time, and I was getting older. So, you know, I'm 33 now, so I've only been doing combat sports for about five and a half years or so. So I was like 27 or 28, and you know, I just wanted to not look back as an older man and have regrets that I never tried. And you know, I played sports and stuff in high school and a little bit going into college, but yeah, so 27 or 28, I think it was like around like February, I ventured into a boxing gym and pretty much never left. So I boxed specifically for about two and a half years to start. And actually COVID kind of ended my boxing journey. I was supposed to compete in the Golden Gloves tournament. I think it was March of 2020. It was supposed to be like end of March, and it was only a couple of days before and they canceled it because of COVID. I remember being in the gym, I think it was like a Tuesday, and I'd heard that they started canceling things for COVID, and I was kind of like, there's no way they're going to cancel it. It's only like 4 days from now or whatever. And then I came back in on Thursday and it was canceled. And I was like, oh man. So I really just still wanted to compete. And I eventually, took a kickboxing fight with like two weeks notice and no experience on a Valhalla card. That was they were the only ones putting on fights at that time. I think it was like August of 2020. And, I remember going in there, I'd never been there before, and it's at the peak of COVID, you know, and nobody's wearing a mask and everybody's packed in like sardines in this little like basement gym, you know, and it really had kind of like an underground kind of feel. I fought some, mixed martial arts guy. It was my first kickboxing fight, but I trained kickboxing for about 2 weeks, and I really went in there and I just boxed them up for three rounds and, got the victory there. And so after that, I decided to try out Muay Thai. I went to the TBA tournament in Iowa, fairly well-known large tournament. And I went to the finals. I fought in Class B. I kind of had a little bit of an injury, and I fought a close match but lost the decision. But after that, I was like, you know, I'm already here. I might as well try MMA. And so shortly after that, I had my first amateur MMA fight and won as well. But I did try to kind of go back to boxing in 2021 before I turned pro, and I had three matchups with some high level amateurs, and two of them no showed, and one of them showed up, weighed in, and then didn't fight. I saw him in the parking lot. He said his stomach wasn't feeling well or something. So that kind of, you know, was the end of boxing for me at that point. I just went where the fights were, and at that time that was MMA. So I continued my amateur journey. I eventually turned pro February of this year. Won my pro debut. My second pro fight, I was in a fight finishing sequence, and they called me for an elbow to the back of the head. So I got a no contest there, which was rough. And then I took a had my last MMA fight September. I went out to Pennsylvania. I fought like a very high level wrestler and had a really good showing, but ended up making a mistake and got caught in a guillotine. So, but I actually had been talking to Scott T about having a boxing match that summer, and it just didn't really pan out with my schedule and stuff. But when this event came back around, I was really happy that he reached back out and that we were able to find an opponent. My original opponent did fall out, but I pretty much said yes to every single person that was a backup, and eventually we got somebody to hop on board. So I'm very happy with that, and I'm really happy to make my pro debut in boxing as well, because it really was my original goal when I started. So it's kind of nice to circle back around, and the journey has been fun. So
Now you were wearing the last time I talked to you, you were wearing a work gym shirt. And for fans that don't know, work is a gym. What is that? Are they in Apple Valley or that area? I can't remember.
Hopkins, it's in Hopkins.
Hopkins. So it's WURK. I've only been there one time. I interviewed Robbie Lloyd there a long time ago. But I know about them and, I try to share their stuff. Can you give a little bit of a rundown of how you got involved, training there? It sounds like, at least one of the guys there is going to help corner you and stuff like that.
My original gym I went to, beginning of my story, was called Guerrilla Combat, and
Oh, okay.
no offense to them, but it to me, like, I was the only one competing originally. And so we kind of just started to build like a competition team around me, but it wasn't with the actual owner of the gym. It was with a guy named Dis McDivitt, who taught boxing there at the time. And eventually him and the gym owner kind of had a falling out. And so I just went with Dis and didn't stay with Gorilla. I'm still like cool with them and friendly with a lot of their fighters and things like that. So there's
Yeah, I think
no
Colton Warner is over there now.
And Colton Warner, they have a guy, Daylon Trigg, who is a good amateur kickboxer MMA, or a Muay Thai fighter who I spar with often. But so we're cool. There's no bad blood or anything. But I just went with Dis, and we kind of wandered around for a while. So I actually went to like Minnesota Top Team and sparred over there. I sparred like Eddie Vallen and Andre Sellers and Eddie Delgado were over there at the time. And so I eventually was sparring over there, and I went to like American Top Team down in Savage and sparred some, and went to Circle of Discipline. I sparred a bunch of those guys over there. So I was kind of just like going around sparring at all these random gyms, and eventually Dis, the coach I had at the time, he lived near Hopkins, and his wife put him on to work. And so that was probably about 3-ish years ago that I joined up over there. And yeah, so it's been great. Honestly, like, I hadn't done a ton of like skill work. I really kind of relied on like strength and athleticism and cardio a bit. So when I got over there, I really started to round out my skill set. Working with D'Alico James is the head coach over there. He kind of runs work, if for those who don't know, is it's was a boxing gym. It kind of has now transformed into an MMA gym as well. But it also has like a very like fitness aspect to it, where they do like personal training one-on-one. They have all the equipment you could imagine, as well as like a boxing ring, an MMA ring, free bags, all that kind of stuff. So I started working with D'Alico, and I do all my strength and conditioning over there. And yeah, I got a lot of work in with really good guys right away. So DeLorean Carraway was over there a lot still, so I got a lot of sparring with him. And Marlon Sims was still there before he moved to Florida, so we sparred a ton. Robbie Lloyd, obviously. And yeah, Nate Richardson, who's fighting today, he's more MMA, but also box spars. So I worked with a lot of those guys and really just found a home, and I've just continued to kind of improve my game. And when I transitioned more into MMA, they kind of stayed along with me. And and like I said, now it's kind of a little bit more of an MMA gym, whereas before it was more of a boxing gym. But we have a lot of pro MMA guys out of there. D'Alico is working with John Castaneda, who's in the UFC. You know,
It
Nate
sounds like they've
Richardson.
got some pretty successful ones too.
Yeah,
Those
he's working
guys
with a lot of high level
tag me
guys.
often, you know, and so I get to see it. I typically only share the boxing stuff that they
Yeah.
tag me in. No offense to them, but I mean, I do have a page that's about boxing, but
For
every once in
sure.
a while I do try and share something about the MMA, but I like to see what they have going on there, and it like you said, it's impressive. They got some good fighters out of there.
Yeah, so it's a good gym. You know, we all work real hard and there's very skill based and then like cardio conditioning based. So
So Delico is in your corner, and who else is going to be working with you?
Chris Meyer, he's more of like my MMA kind of head coach. He actually was from Gorilla originally, and when I took that kickboxing fight on 2 weeks' notice, I basically met with Chris. He wasn't my coach at that time, but I met with him every day for 2 weeks, and he taught me kickboxing stuff in the lead up to that fight. We were actually meeting at a park, like in a on a softball field, and we were training out there, you know, because it was COVID and all the gyms were closed. So yeah, and ever since then, he's really just stuck with me. He has a lot of experience, like 15, 20 years in MMA, and he's kind of similar size. So, you know, we would spar, we would grapple. He's really just done a good job at trying to round out my skill set. And particularly as I went into MMA, I may have said this before, but I really have more of a boxing base even to this day. I'm not much of a kicker. So a lot of what I do was defending the takedown, getting up if you get taken down, and just putting hands on people. So yeah, so it'll be Delico James and Chris Meyer. Those are my two coaches.
What do you know about your opponent? You know, you mentioned that it had changed. I guess we don't care about who it was before. We just care about who it is, right? What do you know about who you are fighting?
Yeah, his name is Terrence Lee. He's 2-1. He's about similar height as me, listed as 5'9" on BoxRec. So I'm about 5'9" as well. So should be about similar size. He fought a couple of guys with kind of upside down records for his first two. He won those. I think the first one by knockout and the second one by split decision. And then I saw his last fight, which was against Trayvon Kroger, I think was his name. He's 5-0 now, so you know, pretty good guy. But he fights out of Iowa, and from what I saw, Terrence kind of lacked output. That would be the biggest thing I would say. If I had to guess, that's probably why he lost that split decision against the guy with the upside down record before this. Maybe just like not putting enough volume out there. So Trayvon was able to really outwork him over the course of the 4 rounds, kind of move in and out, move off his shots, and just really outwork him. So I kind of would look to employ a similar game plan, just be able to do a little more. And you know, the guy looked, you know, he looked like he had some pretty good defense and some good basics. But yeah, I'm just gonna go out there and try and put some hands on him, outwork him over the 4 rounds if I need to, and if I can catch him with something, hopefully hurt him before that.
What weight are you guys fighting at?
140, 140, which
140.
is, I fought at 135 and at 145 professionally for MMA. So 135 is a bit of a cut for me. So I was gonna fight at 135 with my original opponent, but I was kind of happy to have the 140 with Thanksgiving and everything going on, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, around this time of year, that's always a question you ask. Is it holidays making it harder to make weight?
Yeah, for sure.
And then, do you know is well, first of all, I guess, you know, are you Orthodox or Southpaw? And then, do you know if he's Orthodox or Southpaw?
Yeah, I'm Orthodox and he's Orthodox as well, so which is good for me because most of the backup opponents were Orthodox fighters. There was one Southpaw, which I would have said yes to, but I had been training everything to fight an Orthodox for, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks or whatever it's been. So I was happy to still have an Orthodox opponent. So I do everything off the jab. I've been boxing to my right, you know, so I'm happy to keep the game plan intact.
Cool. Yeah, I always get worried when I see a Southpaw out there, you know, with an Orthodox for headbutts, you know,
Yeah.
or stepping on each other's feet. There's a lot more Southpaws, it seems like, today. And I'm not sure if they're actual Southpaws or if they're just converted Southpaws, you know,
Yeah,
so
for
that they have
sure.
a strong jab or what. But seems odd how many Southpaws there are. There's a lot.
I think it I mean, I think if you have any sort of ability to fight Southpaw, that coaches want to either have you fight Southpaw or have you switch or, you know, I think there is an advantage there. And like I said, even sparring southpaws, it's just a little different with the jab because you have the lead hand right there. And like you said, clash of heads, stepping on feet, all that stuff. It's just a bit of a different game.
I guess hopefully nothing happens in this upcoming fight, but just curious, you know, with your kickboxing and MMA background, and now you're boxing, have you ever been cut before?
Yeah, actually my last fight I got cut my first time from a headbutt. Like he kind of went in for a takedown and it was a southpaw orthodox thing. And yeah, clash of heads right here. I had a little cut. So I got suspended for 30 days, but it seems to have healed up and I never had any issues like really with cutting or marking up before that, and so I'm chalking it up to the fact that he hit me with his head.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in our video interview that we had done at Element that you had actually worked some corners at Element before for amateur fighters. Now, when you were doing that, were those amateur fighters from work gym and you were just working on their corners? Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I guess if we go way back, when I was still at Gorilla, I cornered a couple people there. A guy Bodie Sheehan who fights MMA now. I cornered him probably, I don't know, a long time ago. And then I also cornered a girl who came over from Gorilla to work. Her name was Shelby. I can't remember her last name, but I cornered her there, I think against an Element fighter. It was for her first fight. And there was definitely one more person, but I can't quite remember. I've cornered a few now at a few different places, and they all kind of start to blend together at some point.
What was your impression? You know, I know Brian and I have been to these pro shows at Element before, and we've been to the amateur shows, and we like both. I think Element does a great job, but you know, what was your impression of the amateur shows at Element? Because it's slightly different. It's very similar, but they step it up just a little bit, you know, for these pro shows. Q
Yeah,
always has something up his sleeve.
I was impressed when I saw the amateur one, honestly. I mean, like I said, I've been around quite a few, and it was one of the better setups for sure that I've seen for an amateur fight. They had the lights, you know, and the DJ, and it looked really nice in there. So when I knew it was going to be at Element, I figured they'd probably step it up for the pro fight, and it would be even better. So I'm expecting a good show. I know that they always do a good job.
How's it been? You know, are you, fighters typically have like a bunch of fans or family members, you know, coming. Like one of the guys we interviewed there, who's on the card this time around too, was Andre Reed, and we were commenting about how he had, you know, big cheering section that was sitting next to us when we were the last time, and it's cool, you know, to see that, you know, you have when you're fighting in your hometown. And you get all these local fans, and this card has got a lot of Minnesota fighters on it. So we're anticipating that each fighter is going to have a good cheering section, and it makes it more fun. You know, it makes it a more fun atmosphere. You got an entourage from your family or from work or the gym work that are coming to support you.
Yeah, I got a lot of people from work coming. My wife's family lives in Rochester. They pretty much make every fight that I have, so they'll be coming up as well, sitting cage side with my wife. And so yeah, a lot of times I've been the out of town guy, the B side, and even though I've been winning, it's interesting always that, you have people cheering against you or booing you. And I found that when I've been the away guy, I've been able to shut the crowd up pretty quick. But it's always nice to be in the home guy. So last time I fought in Austin, Minnesota, I had a pretty good section there cheering me on. And now that it'll be in the Twin Cities, it'll be even better. I have probably like 10 guys from the gym coming, my training and sparring partners. So I'm excited about that. It'll be nice to get some love on the walkout this time.
You mentioned your
Tim.
sparring partners. Oh, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, Tim, where are you from? Are you from that Austin area or Rochester area
I'm
or?
actually from Florida originally.
Okay.
My father moved from Minnesota, so a lot of my original family was here, and my sister went to high school at Hopkins High School. And when I finished college, I basically came back here and I've been here ever since. So that's about like 2021 or 2010, 2011 time. And yeah, I've loved it up here. It's been great. I think that the people up here are really nice. Like they say, I think that there's a good culture, and outside of the winter, you can't really complain. So, but yeah, I'm from Florida. My wife, her family, lives in Rochester, and I used to have some family scattered around here, but most of them have passed or moved away at this time.
Okay. And what can you tell us a little bit about what you do when you're not boxing? I know most of the people we talk to and interview here have regular full-time jobs. It's pretty tough to make your living in this business. So what can you tell us about your full-time work and outside interests besides boxing?
I've always had an interest in like expressing myself creatively. So I've done a lot of things along that path, like music production, design, art, illustration, animation. I currently work for an education company. Fairly large company. I do animations and simulations for e-learning. So basically where students would do e-learning at home, and maybe there's some kind of science project that they need to do that you can't carry out at home, we would do like an animation or a simulation, basically allowing them to kind of do that virtually. So like baking soda and vinegar into the volcano thing. We would kind of do stuff like that, or and basically my job is to kind of supplement these learning plans with things that make them more engaging. So in this case, it's generally like animation simulations. We do some like teaching assistant stuff, and but if you've ever, I don't know, how to do like a safe sport, like learning for USA Boxing, it's kind of similar to that. Like answer questions, click, see videos, and that's my full-time job. I work from home. I've been doing this since 2020-ish. So I had worked remotely actually for about the past 13 years anyway, but when COVID happened, it actually opened up more opportunities for me. And so I used to freelance full time, and I basically got an offer I couldn't refuse, and I've been working for this company now for about 3 years, and it's been great. So they're really flexible with me, which is very helpful. I train a lot, and so my lunch break I can go train, and when I get off work I can go train, and my gym's real close by my house over here. So it's been great. I'm very fortunate. I'm very appreciative of my job and the opportunities that it affords me.
Well, that flexibility is nice, and I'm fortunate to have that with my job as well. And it just reminded me of we were talking to Coach Q about Gavin Hendrickson was supposed to be on the card, but apparently his opponent fell through because he couldn't get that night off work.
Well, yeah,
And
I think that might have been also because the date changed when Showtime added
exactly.
that Armory
Oh,
card.
yeah.
I was just going to say that, in fairness to the opponent, the card was originally scheduled for the 16th, and then they changed it because they didn't want to compete with the Armory card or have a conflict there, so they switched to the 9th. And but I mean, I guess my point is it just goes to show that people that we're watching in these local shows and we enjoy watching them in the ring and doing their thing there. They also have real-time jobs, real full-time jobs. And so in a way it's kind of cool. You can identify, with these folks. And but I know you guys have a lot on your plate too. So it's nice that you have a chance to get in the ring and do your boxing and also keep a full-time job going. And so lots of respect for what you guys do.
Thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really see the hard work that goes into it. You see them go out on fight night and win or lose or perform well or not. These guys have put in a lot of time and effort. And that's kind of, you asked me a question on media day if I had any words for my opponent that try and scare him or whatever. And I think I said I really relate the most to these people. The other fighters, my opponents. I know that we've probably lived a very similar lifestyle in the lead up to this, and just in general. So I always have a lot of respect for them, particularly when they show up and make weight and put on a good fight. So no ill will for me. Like it's just a competition. I of course want to win. I want to try and knock you out. I expect you to do the same. And afterwards, we can shake hands and have no ill will toward each other, hopefully. So that's where I come from on the sport.
I
Ultimately,
think
I think
that's
that's
the best, you know, is to keep it professional. And like you said, it's, I think of like Manny Pacquiao, and he used to say, like, just doing my job, you know, it's not personal. I mean, I think every once in a while people can let it get personal, you know, at the weigh-ins or whatever, you know, at a certain level, there's so much at stake. But I really have a lot of respect for the fighters that just kind of keep it professional. You know, like you said, you get in the ring, it's different. Like my dad, he would always get mad when he'd see guys touching gloves at the end of every round. He'd be like, don't do that. He's like, touch gloves at the beginning when the ref says to, and otherwise it's the last round, you touch gloves, and then it's just like fight. You know, you can be friends afterwards, you know. You know, you talked a little bit about what you do for work. You know, Brian had mentioned, you know, maybe what some of the stuff you do for fun. And I don't know, maybe I missed it. Did, you know, you have anything that you like to do for your hobbies, or is this basically your hobby?
It's just my hobby, man. It's kind of a job too, but like a lot of what I've done over the past, 10 years working remotely and now having my full-time job is like limiting distractions. And so I don't play video games. I don't, watch a ton of movies or TV or do a lot of that kind of stuff, because before it would distract me from getting my work done. And now I'm kind of beyond that point, but so I mean, I really just train and I work and I like to cook. I cook a lot of food. I have my sponsor, Brookie's Fish Market, who helps out with that. And I freelance still a little bit on the side. So really, I'm just like, man, it's very regimented. This really has been, even since I was an amateur, it's really been like a whole lifestyle for me from the very beginning. Dieting, exercising, trying to live as healthy a life as I can. I pretty much, I don't drink at all anymore. I don't do any of that kind of stuff. I'm going to bed by 10 p.m. every night, and so it's fine with me. Like I'm willing to make the sacrifices, and it doesn't even feel like a sacrifice because I enjoy what I do and I enjoy the opportunities I get. And man, I really just feel grateful that I can go out here and compete and still have this ability. So I hopefully can do this for many more years, and we'll see. Like I said, I'm 33, so I know I've only been in combat sports for 5 years, but I was considered an old man already when I just started, So, but it's fine. Like I've caught up and I've surpassed a lot of those guys, and I really think a lot of this is just like how long you can stay consistent. And how long you can kind of like stay mentally aware and in tune with what you're doing and not just kind of going through the motions. And some of it's like injuries and that avoiding that kind of stuff. So I really just try to do the best I can to give myself the best opportunity to succeed.
You mentioned the holidays, and you know, we were talking about the weight class of the fight. As far as, you know, you're fighting at 140, when you're walking around, you know, typically, and it's not a holiday, are you still floating around this weight? You know, is, because I mean, the reason I ask is fighters seem like they're very different. You know, you've got some fighters that will blow up between fights, and they might put on 20 plus pounds and then have to, you know, take off serious weight. There's other fighters where it seems like they're never that far out of, you know, like maybe 5 pounds, 10 pounds. Like they're always walking around. Like I don't think I've ever seen Jamal, and granted, he carries it well. He's tall and he's slim, but Jamal James, every time I see him, I'm like, it looks like he's ready to fight, you know? You know, so I'm just curious, how does that work for you in between fights?
Yeah, for me, I never really get too big. I'm really probably the biggest I'll get is usually about like 158 pounds or so. And that's like a fairly normal weight for me, around 155 pounds. That's about where I'm usually walking around. And that's when I'm training all the time. Even, I know a lot of pros, they kind of don't train till they get a fight camp kind of thing, but I'm really trying to train all the time and stay consistent. And the diet thing for me really is a big lifestyle. Like obviously, I have to dial it in. There's very specifics as far as when I'm in a fight camp, but I'm always eating healthy. That's just one thing that my wife and I like to do is, we like to eat organic and get stuff from the farm and, cook all my own meals kind of thing. So I don't really eat out a ton, or I haven't had fast food in years or any of that kind of stuff, you know. So no offense to, you know, whatever, but so I'm usually not getting very big, but I am often like cutting a bit of weight. So like if I'm going to 145 for MMA, I'm almost always in range of that. Like I can lose 10 pounds in a week with water load and all that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty much always on weight for that. But when I go to 135, then it's a little bit more of a process. And you know, for 140, it's kind of in between. So I'm happy about that. But it's still a little bit of like dialing in and not, you know, kind of avoiding specific foods and then water load and then, you know, sweating out on the weigh-in day. So, but
So
yeah, I'm usually pretty much in weight.
we're just under a week, away from the fight right now. As we're talking right now, it's Sunday. Fights are next Saturday. Where can you tell us where are you at right now? Are you within where you want to be? I think
Yeah,
you had
everything's good
mentioned
there.
for sparring, it sounded like you were winding that down.
Yeah, I had my last spar yesterday. It went really well. Weight's really good. I was, like I said, I was on the way to 135, so I was being very strict for a while there. And then, with my fight fell out, and so there was about a week and a half or so that I didn't have anyone. I kept training, but it also was Thanksgiving, so I did have a, you know, a plate. Maybe I shouldn't have had some of the stuff, so it kind of, you know, popped me back up a couple pounds. And but since it got changed into 140, I'm on weight and I'm about 10 pounds over right now. So, you know, with and I've just started the water load today. So basically, I'll probably lose like between 5 and 7 pounds with the water load, and then I'll really only have like maybe 2 to 5 pounds to sweat out on the day. And depending on how well, I really think it'll probably be more about like 2 pounds. So it should be a pretty easy cut for me.
Well, after this fight, at least you know that you'll be able to eat well for Christmas, and you won't have to worry about cutting too soon. But the reason I ask about that in between fights is because I think that's part of this, the strategy or the science behind pro fighting as opposed to amateur fights, especially. But you got to stay ready because you never know when your opportunity is going to come. You might be a late opponent, like Vashon had one, I think a week out. We were just talking about that before we started the interview of Vashon Owens, who fought last night and unfortunately lost down in Mexico. His opponent changed like a week out. But yeah, you could be a late choice opponent for someone. So you want to stay ready so you could get those opportunities. For you, it sounds like, you've got a full-time job, so you don't necessarily have to take those fights to make money. But obviously, good opportunity comes along, you want to be able to take it.
Yeah, for sure.
Are do you consider the possibility of possibly, fighting out of state someday or anything like that for boxing?
Yeah, I definitely would. Like I said, my last MMA fight, I went out of state. And yeah, I think I would do the same thing. I mean, I felt like when I first started the pro journey that you know, knowing I was an older guy, that I always kind of felt like I was in a rush, and I really was like trying to rush everything along. And it never really happens how you want it to and at the speed you want it to, really. And you can't really control that. I had a lot of fights drop out, a lot of, you know, pro and amateur fights. I mean, I should have 40 fights right now. I had 20 amateur fights fall out, at least like 12 in amateur boxing, and probably like another 6 to 8 in MMA. So, but I just stayed ready, and I stayed consistent, and I just took every fight I could get pretty much. And even to this day, you know, like, I'm not really one to turn down a fight. I don't think I maybe turned down one fight ever. I was up a weight class, you know, on short notice. And you know, so I really just try and stay consistent and stay ready. And at this point now, I've kind of like surrendered some of that need to control or want to like try and ramp things up or speed things up. And I'm just kind of letting things happen as they happen. And you know, like I said, I had an opportunity to make a pro debut for this promotion back in, I think it was in the summer, and or at least with the matchmaker. And you know, it didn't end up working out, and we came back around. And you know, so now I'm extremely excited. You know, I feel like everyone in MMA is always trying to grapple me. Like every single person is trying to wrestle me and get me down. And you know, I've been able to overcome that, but it's nice to have a stand-up battle. And I like to use my hands, and so it'll be nice to go and let some fists fly. You know, I'm very, once again, excited for the opportunity. And But yeah, I
You
think that
have
I'd love to fight out of state at some point if the opportunity presented itself. Probably not in Mexico or Ecuador or
no.
anything like
Well, a
that,
lot of
but
these guys are fighting down in Iowa. Brian actually recently went down there and he watched Marty Lindquist fight.
yeah.
And actually, the guy that was the main event, Brian, you can tell us about that. It was that David Morrell's opponent for the upcoming Armory
Okay.
show. It was Sina Egbeko was
Yeah.
the main event guy.
Yeah, good guy. We interviewed him on the podcast a couple episodes ago. So I don't know if you're going to try to get out to that Armory card, Tim, but that should be a good one.
Yeah, I'll
Yeah,
probably
the
make it
last
out
show
there.
championship.
I usually try
Yeah.
and get out there and just check it out, you know, even though I'm kind of an old guy and, you know, like to get in bed early. But yeah, I
Yeah, I
actually
feel you.
I'm familiar with the Iowa, the it's 15th round promotions.
Yep.
Yeah,
Yep.
that guy, Trayvon Kroger, that beat Terrence Lee, the guy I'm fighting. We actually were almost, I was gonna almost have a pro debut in boxing against him, maybe like a year ago or something like that. It didn't end up working out, but yeah, when I was looking for a pro fight in boxing back then, we almost made it happen, but I don't really know why. I think they kind of ghosted me eventually, but that's okay.
Well,
So.
I think Ignite would get back into it if, I mean, a couple things. One, they got to have matchups that are going to, draw fans and that are going to make money. And when I was talking to Eric Hinderacher about this way back at Likes Gym, this was before Truax's last fight at the Armory, where he lost, unfortunately. Eric had mentioned that, one of the reasonings that Ignite was getting out of it was just because they need to have both fighters selling tickets, to draw fans in to make money. And there's no real big sort of, matinee, fighter, or fight in Minnesota between two Minnesota fighters that like everyone's calling for. There's
Yeah.
not like when Phil Williams, Zarzar fought, I think there was some bad blood there. So it was like there was blood in the water and drew fans in, and it sold tickets. You need, unfortunately, something like that, whether it's just they are just big fighters and they have big fan bases, or if there's bad blood, whatever, there's got to be people selling tickets. And
Yeah.
he asked me at the time, he's like, well, what two fighters would you want to see fight each other right now? And I got to be honest, I couldn't think of two, that I was just like, I have to see these two guys fight. From Minnesota anyway. You
Yeah.
could think of guys from out of state maybe coming in. So I could feel their pain, and it's a business. And the last time they were down at Canterbury, it didn't help that the fans really screwed them, and blew up and were brawling during the Danny Huffman, Damian Hill fight. And
Yeah.
one person threw a beer bottle at the corner of the ring, and it was not good. Basically, to my understanding, Canterbury was going to make them pay through the nose if they ever were going to get fights there again. They were going to have increased security. They wouldn't be able to have glass beer bottles and so on and so forth. So I don't blame them for not putting on boxing shows when that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
But it stinks for the fighters because you need more shows, to get these fighters on.
Right. And part of like building up to a big, you know, fight is you have to have these smaller fights to kind of build some of these fighters. And when people aren't fighting locally, particularly in boxing, then they're not really building a fan base and getting their name out there. And so you're not really able to have one of these big shows where you have two Minnesota guys that, whether they're big draws or have, you know, dislike of one another to sell those tickets and to fill the house, like you said. They also kind of did a lot of like MMA fighters crossing over into boxing kind of thing, which is fine. You know, I'm one of them, so you know, it is what it is. But you know, you're not always gonna sell maybe quite as well in those cases.
No, I think usually, and it's not necessarily fair, but I think from boxing fans' point of view, normally when you hear a guy's got MMA background and he's crossing over, and maybe they've got extensive MMA background and this is going to be their first pro boxing fight, usually you're kind of like, all right, do they have hands?
Right.
Like to your point, you're an MMA fighter who actually prefers to stand and trade. But a lot of guys aren't. Like you said, a lot of guys want to take to the ground.
Yeah.
So if someone doesn't have hands and it's their first boxing fight, it could be kind of a snoozer, or you worry that
Right,
they
for
could get
sure. Yeah.
hurt. You don't want them to get hurt either.
Yeah. Well, you see that a lot, I think, even on some of these like Top Rank or PBC kind of shows where they bring an MMA fighter in and they'll say like they're tough and you know you can tell kind of they have the MMA style, but they're not always great with their hands, you know, and maybe like Clay Collard or somebody was kind of the exception to the rule, but
Well, the
so yeah,
latest
you see
one was
that
that
kind of
Frank
often.
Ngannou against Tyson Fury. I
And that
think
was crazy.
everyone in the world, I think, basically was like, you know, all the boxing fans were sort of like, all right, we owe that dude an apology. Because like nobody was giving him a shot at all, even you know, even though he's huge.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, Tyson Fury is just gonna maul him and you know and take care of him. And I think there's a good case to be made that that was a draw or a loss, for sure.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I didn't, like you said, I'd seen some clips of him, you know, in the lead up, and he didn't look very good. But and you know, I figured Tyson Fury would just kind of put it on him, and I know that Ngannou's got a good chin and is tough, and I figured him to kind of last. But in boxing, you'll see if a fighter is just, you know, laying hands on a guy for 20, 30 seconds, the ref will just step in and stop the fight. And so I kind of expected to see that at some point, but Ngannou did really well. He was very athletic, and you know, particularly early on, it seemed like he was bouncing and moving, and he had good vision. And you know, obviously, he's got the power. It transferred over in the boxing glove. So, man, I was really surprised. And yeah, if I ever talked to him, I would apologize as well.
The headliner for your show that you're fighting on here at Element is Sling Proper. You know, he goes by Sona. I should say he goes by Sling Proper. That's his rap name. His na real name is Sona Akali, I think. I always call him Slink. So apologies, Slink, because I never call you by your actual birth name. But the reason I bring him up right now is because we asked him after his last fight against the grandson of Muhammad Ali, you know, where he won against Nico Ali Walsh on ESPN, big upset, huge upset. I asked him if any celebrities or fighters or anything, you know, reached out to him or liked his posts and stuff. And he said that Ngannou actually liked one of his posts or something. And he thought that was really cool because they're both from Cameroon.
Okay, very cool. Yeah.
So yeah, I would think that, you know, once you get to that level, it's got to be pretty surreal. You know, he said they were sitting at a table with Bob Arum, and like, that's just insane.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Well, and locally, we had other guys too, like Josh Clark. You know, they recently fought down on a Don King card in Florida, you know, where they
Yep.
met Larry Holmes and Don King and Boom Boom Mancini. You know, he got to meet a bunch of different people. So it's pretty cool to see our local guys get to that level. And you know, same for guys like Vishon and Jamal and now David Morrell and you know
Yeah,
Caleb
actually,
Twix,
no, I know Josh Clark pretty
Rob
well,
Brandt.
actually.
Well, yeah, you
And
said you had been
I,
over at Valhalla.
yeah, we used to spar together a lot. And when I actually transitioned into MMA, they pretty much taught me how to wrestle, like Josh Clark and James Clark, his father. And then when Josh Clark was kind of going into pro boxing, I actually would go there and give him a ton of rounds. And so we're quite friendly and we sparred a lot, and you know, MMA and boxing. Yeah, and he was one of those ones where he went down to Ecuador, I think it was, and kind of
Yeah,
lost.
he got
What I heard
hosed
was
down
like a,
there.
I didn't see the fight, but you know, I heard it was shady, and you know, so I maybe stay away from doing that.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the news or not, but James Clark, his dad, sounds like is basically kind of stepping back. I'm guessing he won't be able to ever just get away from the gym because it's his life. But it sounds like Josh has taken over Valhalla too, because Josh has been the owner of Strike Fitness, you know, which was a form of title boxing that the owner Mark Royce and his wife they converted it, you know, because of COVID. Really, I think that they needed to start their own business so they could do things the way they wanted to, and it was tough for them. And they ended up moving down, I want to say, to Arizona, but then they sold it to Josh, and he's been doing great with it as Strike Fitness, and him and his dad. You know, I've been doing these combo shows where it's Valhalla and Strike Fitness, and they've been, I think, having a lot of success doing the shows that have like really Brazilian jiu-jitsu and you know wrestling and boxing and or sometimes they call it striking. But yeah, now the word is, I believe that Josh is going to technically be running both. The basement gym you were referring to, Tim, I used to go over there in Fridley on Fridays and sometimes on Sundays, and I'd go work out with Marty Lindquist for boxing. He's still trying to get me to go. Since they've been at the new location, the boxing classes are now at Strike Fitness on Fridays, and I'm guessing probably they are on Sundays as well. I haven't been over there yet to do that. I kind of liked it when it was in the dungeon. Like you said, it's kind of old school.
Just reminded me of old,
like how you would imagine it, like in the old days, you know, in like Philadelphia or something, going down into a dungeon, you know. Or...
Hot in the summer, cold in the winter.
Yep. Now, I guess a few last questions here. You know, I'll let you, Brian, if you want to think of your closing questions here. The one that I wanted to ask you about was, you know, let you talk about it. I asked you about your Ringwalk song, and I'm not familiar with this guy at all. And you told me you were going to probably walk out to this guy, Young Gravy. I think it's called Get Money. And I watched the video, and I know I messaged you on Instagram, and I was just like, man, I loved it. It was funny. Apparently the guy's from Minnesota. I think he lives in Cali now. But, you know, how did you get into that? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you've got some background making music. Is that how you learned about him, or is it just your type of music, or what?
I wouldn't really say he's my type of music. I'd heard about him, you know, a few years ago. He was kind of like, when he came up, considered like a comedic kind of rapper, where it was kind of like a shtick where he was, you know, kind of saying like funny lyrics and, you know, kind of putting on like the persona of a rap kind of guy. And, but he was really seemingly like a suburban white dude. And so it was kind of like comedic and funny. And that Get Money song was actually, I think, his first kind of like bigger hit. And like I said, I kind of had knew about him, but yeah, I mean, I just like the song. I kind of was a fan of 80s music. So, you know, Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. Like, you know, it's obviously like an internet meme now too, but yeah, I just like the song, and I thought, you know, the lyrics were kind of funny. And for me, it's just like a very kind of lighthearted, like happy kind of, vibe to the song. And so when I'm walking out, like I said before, I don't really like, you know, too like hardcore or something that's going to make me like emotional, either in a good or a bad way, or like get me two amps, because I noticed in the past that kind of would, I'd fight differently, you know. And before, I used to be much more of like a brawler, much more of I'm knocked everybody out pretty much anyway, but a lot of that was more so just like kind of going crazy in there. And as I've evolved and progressed, I've really kind of, I've tried to transition away from like the monster and more into like the serial killer, where I want to be like very cool and composed and calm the whole time. And, you know, like that way I'm not kind of like working out beyond myself or doing something to put myself in danger. And that's really been a learning lesson through these fights and kind of figuring out what works for me best. And so, yeah, it's a great song. I love the song. You guys should check it out. You know, he's a Minnesota guy, so a lot of people kind of know him around here. And
yeah, I love the Rick Astley song myself as well. And I think that it's had a resurgence. You know, I mean, I think a lot of fans always liked it, that had heard it. But this past year or so, maybe a little bit longer ago, I don't know if you ever watched the show Ted Lasso. It kind of had a big comeback in that show. Okay. It's where this guy goes over to England, and he was a college football coach, and he ends up coaching like a soccer team, you know, football over there, like a big time one where he has no business doing it.
Yeah.
Sort of like a major league, you know, when you get brought in to run it into the ground. But no, it's a good show. And at one point in there, you know, that song has big comeback, and this woman sings it like karaoke. Everybody loves it.
I'll have to check it out.
But no, I love it, man. That video is hilarious. First time I ever watched it or heard it, you know. So yeah, definitely check out Young Gravy. That's Y-U-N-G. So there's no O in the Young.
Yeah.
I even saw some video with, he was on stage with Shania Twain, and I was like, what? Yeah, he looks like he's funny.
Yeah, he's always doing all kinds of like internet antics to get clicks and views and stuff. So
well, I look forward to that. Brian, you got any closing comments? Otherwise, we can let him give a shout out to his sponsors and all that.
No, I'm good to go. You guys covered it, but just thanks for taking some time to talk to us, Tim. It's been great to get to know you a little bit, and I can tell you're a good guy, and I wish you well, and look forward to seeing you at the Element show on the 9th.
Yeah, thank you both so much. I really appreciate the opportunity at Media Day, and for reaching out again to set this up. Like I said, it's cool, and it's nice to do this stuff. It's a little different for me. So, I definitely appreciate that. And yeah, I'll shout out my sponsor, Brookie's Fish Market. They're in Texatonka, in St. Louis Park. So if you're off 100 or 169 on Minnetonka, just go down and you'll find Brookie's Fish Market there. They have all kinds of great fish products and some assorted other products, but you know, sushi grade, just anything you could imagine, shellfish, whole fish. You can put in orders for however many you want and things like that. Really cool guys. Really good people. One of the owners is Michael. He plays in a band around here. So I'm very happy to be connected with them. And
yeah, didn't you say his name is Michael Wright and the band's called Michael Wright and the Wrongs?
His name is Michael Wright, and then the band is called Michael Wright and the Wrongs. So pretty clever there. Cool. They just played a show out at Floyd's in Victoria, and I think they have another one coming up here pretty quick. So they're really good, actually. Like, my wife and I went and checked him out, and, you know, I heard he played in a band, and I didn't really know what to expect, but I went to check him out to show my support, you know, and man, I was blown away. They were really good. They had the whole, like, light system and everything, so kind of like funk, R&B-ish, kind of rock vibe, so it really seemed appealing to, like, everyone of different ages and things like that, so... shout out Michael Wright and the Wrongs as well. They're not really my sponsor, but Michael's really cool, good guy. And so I just want to say thank you to my gym, Work Gym. I'm very thankful to be out of there. And to the owners, Delico James, who coaches me, and Maurice, the co-owner. And then to Chris Meyer, my other coach. And just all the sparring and training partners in this camp and just along the way, you know. So shout out to those guys. Nate Richardson fights tonight for Fury FC down in Texas. If he gets the win, he may get the call up to the UFC. So I'm cheering for him tonight and appreciate the work we got to put in together. So,
yeah, definitely. Best of luck to Nate.
Yeah.
Well, right on, dude. Like, I'm super happy that we were able to do this because I felt bad, you know, even though we did get to, you know, talk to you a little bit at Element before for that media day, you know, there's sparring going on in the background. There's a class going on, you know. It was chaos. And this is more our speed. You know, we want to be able to take our time a little bit, get to know you. And more importantly, we want the fans to be able to get to know you. So yeah, thanks again, man. This has been great.
Well, thank you guys. And thanks for building up the Minnesota Fighters. We definitely appreciate it. So, and yeah, it's all good. I didn't really have an expectation for the media day. Like I said, it was my first time. So I was just kind of hanging out and enjoying myself.
Yeah, it was a fun visit. It was just, but yeah, it's also nice to have a chance to talk in a more relaxed setting as well. So glad you're
well, like I said, I gave him a hard time because he left before I got him his shirts. You have to message me your size again, Tim, so I can get you your shirts. I'll bring them to the fights on Saturday.
I will. Appreciate you guys, and I'll see you there.
Thank you. Right, man. Good rest of your
day. Thank you so much. Have a good one. Appreciate you.